Good afternoon. It is Ward Green. This is June 5th, 2023. The time, 17:02 Eastern Daylight Time, now 17:03. We've just had the WWDC video and conference in, well, it's been on the internet, and it's given a lot of information about new products coming out. The new Mac Pro, notably, and it's phenomenal. It looks like phenomenal. And they're keeping the price down to 7,000 US, which is, considering how much more powerful this new Mac Pro is, it's got to be a bargain. And then if it works, it's going to be a bargain. And the other thing is there's a new Vision Pro headset that is an augmented reality with its own OS called Vision OS that's just been announced, and neither of these two products is actually being made available immediately, except, let me think, they can be ordered, at least one of them, next week, but I guess that means that one of them is available, it sounds like. But the headset is not available immediately. It's going to be next year, I think, but it's got so much to be said about it and so many new things about it that there needed to be an announcement about it. So, I mean, it's to just educate people about all these new things. This is a new interface. It doesn't use a mouse or a keyboard as an interface, at least the way I can so far understand it. But it uses your eyes, and it uses your fingers, your hands, your gestures. It detects these, and it uses them as though they were input devices, like a mouse or a keyboard. So that's remarkable. But also, you can put vision-corrected lenses in the headset, too, to correct your vision. It's remarkable, all these different things that are going to be, I was going to say announced, but they have been announced already. All these details have been so far announced. Maybe there will be more things announced. I wouldn't be surprised. But there have been things announced in great detail already about the new headset. It's exciting. And it's going to be somewhere around $4,000, I believe, something like that, which is still that's U.S., though. So in Canada, the Mac Pro will be about $10,000 or more, I think. And in the headset would be maybe $7,000 in Canada, which is, you know, it's reachable for some people who are using technology and who need to or want to experience the benefits of this new technology, such as the headset, but also the Mac Pro. It can take 24 simultaneous streams of video and process them using, that's what, you know, with the most fully capable configuration, which is going to cost more than that base price, of course, that 7,000 US base price. That's just the base price. That's not going to be the maximum performance of the Mac Pro, and some of the options may be only configurable upon purchase. You may not be able to upgrade them later, so you have to be aware of that also. This is a song from 1972, written by Jack Temchin, but recorded by the Eagles and sung by Glenn Frey. It's called "Peaceful Easy Feeling."
Skin so brown,
I didn't realize that was going to stop when I clicked it the first time. Anyway, that's the song, basically. There's very little. It's over at that point, basically. So, our study in the Wild Road article today is from chapter 11. It begins with this redressing unhistorical nobility title, which when you put the initial letter of each word together, you get the word run. Redressing unhistorical nobility. And the scripture that comes for the theme of the chapter is, this is chapter 11, paragraph 1 of part 2 of Wild Road, Ahead to History. The scripture is, for through the multitude of trial a dream comes, and a fool's voice is with a multitude of words. Brenton, 1851, translation of Ecclesiastes 5 and 2. The Tithonus, or Teutamus, of the Greek mythology, who was associated to Troy, and the founding of Shushan, Susa, Persia, is apparently linguistically alike to Thoth. Tithonus, Teutamus, Thoth. His son Memnon is sent to aid the Trojans in their war with Greece in the days of Agamemnon, son of Atreus. Phalus, or Phallus, was a Phoenician king said to be a friend of the Greeks during this war. His name is spelled P-H-A-L-I-S. who by the interchangeable characters of P and B may become Baalis, in brackets, Belus, B-E-L-U-S, or Ithobaal, I-T-H-O-B-A-A-L, Ithobaal, he being the first Ithobaal, and called Ethbaal in Kings, 1 Kings in the Bible, chapter 16, verse 31, of Phoenicia he is. While the exact details of the dating are being worked out, in general, the dates will be found to be correct with the Trojan War, 898 BCE to 888 BCE. That's one particular Trojan War. Using the 155 years of Josephus from Menander as the total from Hiram year 1 at Tyre to the founding of the Carthage city in 881 BCE leads to Hiram year 1 in 1036 BCE. That's a typo there where it says the Carthage. It should say to the founding of the city of Carthage, or it should say the founding of Carthage. I need to fix that at some point. But Hiram year 1, when we take the 155 years of Josephus from Menander as the total from Hiram all the way to the founding of Carthage in 881, we get 881 plus 155, which is 1036 BCE. That's then the year 1 of Hiram, the king at that time in Phoenicia. This year has the ability to strongly confirm the date of the Temple of Jerusalem as 1024, with Hiram's reign clearly from the Bible spanning significant parts of both David's and Solomon's reigns at Jerusalem. The 34 years of Hiram being 1036 to 1002 in this understanding. This works because the laying of the foundation of the Temple of Solomon at Jerusalem in 1014 BCE surely must have required years of preparation, as David insisted, preparing in great quantity iron, copper, cedars, and square-hewn stones before the temple was founded, 1014. The 10 years required for this preparation is expected due to several additional factors, one of which is the 20 years of Solomon's building projects, including the 7 years from founding to completion of the temple and the completion of the House of Solomon, which thus took an additional 3 years when the 10 years prior to the temple's construction is included, and might be otherwise a seemingly very long 13 years, too long for the building of the man's house compared to Jehovah's. Another thing is that Hiram's death occurred after the end of the 20 years of building, from 1 Kings 9, 10 to 13, as Hiram was still able to go out to view those cities that Solomon had given him as a gift in 1004 or later. Since the temple was completed in 1007 BCE, this would allow 3 years for the building of Solomon's house. Sir Isaac Newton suggests that Hiram's reign commenced in year 23 of King David, and this is also 1036 BCE. Without Hiram's reign being extended, this is the only way for Hiram to have assisted with David's own house, and for Hiram to have been, quote, a lover of David always, end quote. That being from 1 Kings 5 and 1. David ruled in Hebron from 1058 to 1050 BCE, and in Jerusalem from 1050 to 1017 BCE. While Hiram was born in this understanding in 1055 BCE, in David's reign, because there is a source that says we have the source of the list of the kings of Phoenicia where Hiram is given 53 years of life, and so from 1002, at the end of his reign, we get 1055 for the beginning of his life. And that 1055 is during David's reign, fairly early in the reign of David, which began in 1058. Not only this, but Hiram's death is thus also in 1002, 12 years after the founding of the temple, in addition to the building, the quote, building of the temple, end quote, in 1024 being year 12, that is, of Hiram. So that's a way to understand the portion of Josephus where it talks about the temple being constructed beginning in year 12 of Hiram, and still have it be consistent with Hiram's year 1 being 1036. The total of 143 years is also given as an independent total by Josephus from year 12, 1024, that's of Hiram, to 881 Carthage. So we have 143 years added on to 881, which is 1024. We mention also 1025 BCE as a temple date in green, the article called Green. We have documented our BG chronology in various works. The founding of Carthage in the footnote here in 881 is here evidenced. The Israelite chronology is ours. Solomon year 1, 1017, including 430 years of Israelite kings from the Bible, and 47 years higher than popular convention, while the date of Hiram in 1036 is 56 years higher than popular. The main adjustment here is Hiram shifted up 18 years. Evidently, it's an adjustment of 18 years higher than where we may have placed him before. The end of the Trojan War is fixed in 888 by the solar eclipse in Gozos. That's an island in the Mediterranean. In 879 BCE, implied in the Odyssey, which is one of Homer's works, the Odyssey, which we detail. Anyway, the Odyssey, is that Homer's work? I can't even remember who wrote the Odyssey now. The Iliad and the Odyssey, I think those are both Homer's works. Or whoever's works it is, it's one of his works. It's a classic, let's just put it that way, I guess. Since we're not dealing with the details of everything today, we're not going to look up who wrote the Odyssey. We'll just call it a great classic of Greek literature, that's what it is. And in that, there's a solar eclipse that we can identify in 879 BCE on the island of Gozos. And we detail this in our article, History of Babylon, paragraph 4.9 and 4.11, those two paragraphs. That's chapter 4, paragraph 9, and chapter 4, paragraph 11. And also, as two dates, we detail it in our article called Green, the two dates being 825 BCE and 878 BCE. Of course, the latter one is the one that is consistent with the solar eclipse in 879, very nearly. And also, this is 10 years after, the 878 is 10 years after 888, which is the end of the Trojan War. Okay, so the 878 occurred 10 years after. Now, in order to go through all those details, we have to go and read those articles and find out what it says. For some reason, we know that this event on the island of Gozos, as we have identified it, occurred 10 years after, or in the 10th year after, the end of the Trojan War. We know that somehow. I'm saying right now, because I'm not looking at the details, I can't know every single detail. I'd have to look it up and find out how did we know that was 10 years later. At this point, I'm surmising that it was a statement made in the Odyssey, in the work called the Odyssey by Homer, where he mentions that it was 10 years after the Trojan War that this occurred. So he didn't even call it an eclipse. It was an implied, it was implied. The eclipse was implied in the text by the events that happened, that were happening, that indicated what appeared to be an eclipse. That's all we have. We don't have any other information about that. And also, in the Chronology of Ancient Kingdoms Amended, 1728, posthumously released by Sir Isaac Newton, quote, Hiram succeeded his father, Abibulus, in the 23rd year of David, as we mentioned, end quote, as we mentioned in the paragraph today. So that's today's study in the Wild Road article from this time, chapter 11. Now, little children, from Ecclesiastes, chapter 11, verse 2, today's proverb, give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what calamity will occur on the earth. It appears to be wise advice. We don't always remember to do that, though, do we? That we don't always remember to share with different ones, so that if there is a calamity, we have a resource or many resources from which to draw. Leviticus chapter 5. Now, in case a soul sins in that he has heard public cursing, but we need to get a cross-reference to the study Bible for this. He has heard a public call to testify. So in case a soul sins in that he has heard a public call to testify and he is a witness, or he has seen it or has come to know of it, if he does not report it, then he must answer for his error. Or when a soul touches some unclean thing, whether the dead body of an unclean wild beast or the dead body of an unclean domestic animal or the dead body of an unclean swarming creature, although it has been hidden from him, still he is unclean and has become guilty. Or in case he touches the uncleanness of a man, as respects any uncleanness of his with which he may become unclean, although it had been hidden from him, and yet he himself has come to know it, then he has become guilty. Or in case a soul swears to the extent of speaking thoughtlessly with his lips to do evil or to do good, as respects anything at all that the man might speak thoughtlessly in a sworn statement, although it had been hidden from him, and yet he himself has come to know it, then he has become guilty as respects one of these things. And it must occur that in case he becomes guilty as respects one of these things, then he must confess in what way he has sinned. And he must bring his guilt offering to Jehovah for his sin that he has committed, namely, a female from the flock, a female lamb, or a female kid of the goats for a sin offering. And the priest must make an atonement for him for his sin. If, though, he cannot afford enough for a sheep, then he must bring as his guilt offering for the sin that he has committed two turtle doves or two pigeons to Jehovah, one for a sin offering and one for a burnt offering. And he must bring them to the priest, who must present first the one for the sin offering and nip off its head at the front of its neck, but he should not sever it. And he must spatter some of the blood of the sin offering upon the side of the altar, but the remainder of the blood will be drained out at the base of the altar. It is a sin offering. And the other one he will handle as a burnt offering according to the regular procedure, and the priest must make an atonement for him for his sin that he has committed, and so it must be forgiven him. Now, if he does not have the means for two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he must bring as his offering for the sin he has committed the tenth of an ephah of fine flour for a sin offering. He must not pour oil upon it, and he must not place frankincense upon it, for it is a sin offering. And he must bring it to the priest, and the priest must grasp from it his handful as a remembrancer of it, and must make it smoke on the altar upon Jehovah's offerings made by fire. It is a sin offering. And the priest must make an atonement for him for his sin that he has committed, any one of these sins, and so it must be forgiven him, and it must become the priest's, the same as a grain offering. And Jehovah continued to speak to Moses, saying, in case his soul behaves unfaithfully and that he actually sins by mistake against the holy things of Jehovah, then he must bring as his guilt offering to Jehovah a sound ram from the flock, according to the estimated value in silver shekels, by the shekel of the holy place, as a guilt offering. And he will make compensation for the sin he has committed against the holy place, and he will add to it a fifth of it, and he must give it to the priest, that the priest may make an atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering, and so it must be forgiven him. And if a soul sins in that he does do one of all the things that Jehovah commands should not be done, although he did not know it, yet he has become guilty and must answer for his error. And he must bring a sound ram from the flock according to the estimated value for a guilt offering to the priest, and the priest must make an atonement for him for his mistake that he committed unintentionally, although he himself did not know it. And so it must be forgiven him. It is a guilt offering. He has positively become guilty against Jehovah. That's the end of Leviticus chapter 5. Mark 5? Well, they got to the other side of the sea into the country of the Gerasenes, Jesus and his disciples. And immediately after he got out of the boat, a man under the power of an unclean spirit met him from among the memorial tombs. He had his haunt among the tombs, and up to that time, absolutely nobody was able to bind him fast, even with a chain, because he had oftentimes been bound with fetters and chains, but the chains were snapped apart by him, and the fetters were actually smashed. And nobody had the strength to subdue him. And continually, night and day, he was crying out in the tombs and in the mountains, and slashing himself with stones. But on catching sight of Jesus from a distance, he ran and did obeisance to him. And when he had cried out with a loud voice, he said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I put you under oath by God not to torment me." For he had been telling it, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." But he began to ask him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, because there are many of us." And he entreated him many times not to send the spirits out of the country. Now a great herd of swine was there at the mountain feeding. So they entreated him, saying, "Send us into the swine that we may enter into them." And he permitted them. With that, the unclean spirits came out and entered into the swine, and the herd rushed over the precipice into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they drowned, one after another, in the sea. But the herders of them fled and reported it in the city and in the countryside, and people came to see that it was what it was that had happened. So they came to Jesus, and they beheld the demon-possessed man sitting clothed and in his sound mind, this man that had had the legion, and they grew fearful. Also those who had seen it related to them how this had happened to the demon-possessed man and about the swine, and so they started to entreat him to go away from their districts. Now as he was boarding the boat, the man that had been demon-possessed began entreating him that he might continue with him. However, he did not let him, but said to him, "Go home to your relatives and report to them all the things Jehovah has done for you and the mercy he had on you." And he went away and started to proclaim in the Decapolis all the things Jesus did for him. And all the people began to wonder. After Jesus had crossed back again in the boat to the opposite shore, a great crowd gathered together to him, and he was beside the sea. Now one of the presiding officers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, came, and on catching sight of him, he fell at his feet and entreated him many times, saying, "My little daughter is in an extreme condition. Would you please come and put your hands upon her that she may get well and live?" At that he went off with him, and a great crowd was following him and pressing against him. Now there was a woman subject to a flow of blood 12 years, and she had been put to many pains by many physicians and had spent all her resources and had not been benefited, but rather had got worse. When she heard the things about Jesus, she came behind in the crowd and touched his outer garment, for she kept saying, "If I touch just his outer garments, I shall get well." And immediately her fountain of blood dried up, and she sensed in her body that she had been healed of the grievous sickness. Immediately also Jesus recognized in himself that power had gone out of him, And he turned about in the crowd and began to say, "Who touched my outer garments?" But his disciples began to say to him, "You see the crowd pressing in upon you, and do you say, 'Who touched me?'" However, he was looking around to see her that had done this. But the woman, frightened and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be in good health from your grievous sickness." While he was yet speaking, some men from the home of the presiding officer of the synagogue came and said, "Your daughter died? Why bother the teacher any longer?" But Jesus, overhearing the word being spoken, said to the presiding officer of the synagogue, "Have no fear, only exercise faith." Now he did not let anyone follow along with him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. So they came to the house of the presiding officer of the synagogue, and he beheld the noisy confusion and those weeping and letting out many wails. And after stepping in, he said to them, "Why are you causing noisy confusion and weeping? The young child has not died, but is sleeping." At this they began to laugh scornfully at him. But having put them all out, he took along the young child's father and mother and those with him, and he went in where the young child was. And taking the hand of the young child, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which translated means, "Maiden, I say to you, get up." And immediately the maiden rose and began walking, for she was 12 years old. And at once they were beside themselves with great ecstasy. But he ordered them again and again to let no one learn of this. And he said that something should be given her to eat. That's the end of Mark chapter 5 and the end of our study for today. Little children, yes, I love you very much. And this is June 5th, 2023, 1735 now, Eastern Daylight Time, just to the very second almost when I said it. Ward Green with you. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed the study. I apologize for truncating the song a little bit at the end. It's a beautiful, wonderful song, is it not? And we all, I think, appreciate that song. Those of us who have heard that song, "Peaceful, Easy Feeling" by the Eagles. But of course, it was written by Jack Temchin, which before this I did not know. So I think that's all for today. It's been exciting and probably a long enough video. I'm going to be working on the editing for this video to do something a little bit extra. And for me, in the meantime, God bless you, and may we all benefit from our exemplar, Jesus Christ. This is Star and Cammie saying bye for now.